time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now, here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello, Earn Your Spurs listeners. Welcome to episode number 13 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. Thank you so much for tuning in to this special Veterans Day episode of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. A few months ago, some of my fellow podcasters cooked up an idea to get a bunch of podcasters together to donate one episode of their podcast to a veteran in the month of November. So, of course, I jumped at the opportunity to be a part of Voices for Vets because my significant other is a veteran and we're very supportive of the military in our household. I also thought it was a good fit for the podcast because there's a lot of similarities between cowboys and soldiers. And I knew immediately who I was going to interview for this episode. Now, you may not already know Chelsea Stimson, but you're about to. She's a veteran of the U.S. Navy, a military widow, and an avid barrel racer. And she's been a horse lover since she was just a little girl. She knew she always wanted to have horses in her life, but it wasn't until after she lost her husband, Navy SEAL Tyler Stimson, that she learned just how much she actually needed horses in her life. Now Chelsea uses her barrel racing to serve as a voice for other military widows and veterans organizations, and she's truly passionate about helping others get started with horses as well. I have to tell you, I could have talked to Chelsea all day. And in fact, I talked to her for quite a while off the recording because I just enjoyed it so much. And I really hope that she moves back to Montana just so we can hang out. During the interview, Chelsea mentioned several of the organizations that she is personally involved with, and I will link to those in the show notes so you can check them out and make a contribution if any of them resonate with you. So without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Chelsea. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Chelsea. I really appreciate you being here, and I'm excited to share your story with the listeners.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you start out and just tell us a little bit about your backstory, all the way back to when you joined the military and kind of where you started and where you are today now?
Okay. Well, in high school, I decided that I was going to go to the Navy. And I left about 2 weeks after graduation, and that was in 2002. And from there, I went to Great Lakes for boot camp, and that is where I met Tyler. We ended up both in a performing division as non-performers, and we just kind of built the friendship from there. And then we went to Pensacola, and we found out we were both going there, and we started dating. And he talked me into it. And then from there, he was going to Buds to be a SEAL. And he told me that when we were in boot camp. And then I found out I was going to San Diego as well. And that's where I was going to be stationed. So we kind of ended up meeting in boot camp. And basically, we felt it was kind of meant to be because every next step, we were going to the exact same place, which is pretty rare for the military. So that was the really cool thing about it. And then eventually, he went to the East Coast. Went to the East Coast to be based, and I went up to Washington, and we spent ungodly amounts of money flying across the country for a day or two, maybe. Oh. So that's the story with Tyler. But yeah, I left home from Montana at 18. I joined as soon as I could. I was 17. I had to have my parents sign for me, and then I left. And it was great. I always wanted to do that. I wanted to serve. I wanted to do something bigger. And at the time, I loved my horses, but for some reason, I had it in my head that like it wasn't a reasonable idea to go to college and, just do horse stuff. So I wanted to serve and do something better myself. So I went to the Navy, and I did that until 2006. And Tyler and I got engaged. So he was on the East Coast. I was on the West Coast. So it was time to make a change. So I went to the East Coast and we got married, and we were there until 2010. When unfortunately he was killed in an accident, and that changed everything, and that ended a whole era of my life, I guess a chapter of my life is what I call it. So yeah, that changed my life, and that was really difficult. And then in 2012, I moved to Nevada, I had started dating and met another SEAL who, which was not the intention. It just, I never the intention. That's just what happened. So I thought I would take a little break from Virginia and go to Nevada, and then we would come back to Virginia. And I came to Nevada, and within 3 months, I had a horse trailer, and then I bought a horse, and I decided I was going to start barrel racing. So that's the story in, I guess, as short as I can make it without going on and on. So,
wow. Well, that's a lot in a nutshell, I guess you could say. So what was it that made you decide that you wanted to join the military? Do you know?
Yeah, I just... Well, there was a few things. One, that when I started looking at it, everyone was, you know, like, oh, you can't leave home. Like, that's crazy. Why would you go to the military? And you're a girl. So for me, I was like, oh, that just made me want to do it more. You know, oh, okay, well, then I really have to do this because you're thinking that I can't do it. And I guess I've just always been that way. I've always been patriotic, and I just felt like drawn to it, led to it. I wanted to serve my country, and it's just the idea of doing it just made me feel proud, you know, I just felt led to do it. There's a lot of reasons why people join the military. And I guess I'm one of those people that I did it because I really did truly want to serve my country. So.
That's awesome. Thank you for your service. So you said that you rode when you were younger. How did you get into horses in the first place?
Well, I got into horses by driving my parents crazy. And so we moved out to the country, and they found a horse for me. His name was Jigs. He was a quarter horse Appaloosa. And before we brought him home, I was lucky enough that the lady that owned him said she would give me lessons and all the stuff. She took me to some shows, and she really taught me how to ride. Her name was Elaine. And so, yeah, that's where I learned, was from her and from Jigs. He was just a old, fat guy, but he was great, though. He was great. And he taught me a lot. So that's how I started. And actually, the Tryons, they live just down the road from me. Well, a few roads down from me. And I would go down to their Young Riders series and, you know, try our best on the barrels. And my sister did some goat roping, too. Just funny. But that's how I got started. Yeah, I went to just some little shows around with Jigs, and Elaine would take me, and then I would go down to the Young Rider series. Again, I would drive my parents crazy, so my dad would rush home on Tuesdays. I think it was Tuesday nights, and go down there and run my 20s on the pattern, and never placed, but loved it. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
So was your family into horses at all before you came along?
No, just me. I just drove everyone crazy until, so, you know, we had horses because I wanted them, and my sister rode a little bit, but she wasn't really into it. So no, further back, my grandparents' family, they were from Scotland and ranchers for a while over in Western Montana. And I still have some family up there actually that ranch still.
What do you think kind of sparked that interest for you, not really being from, you know, not really having that background from birth or whatever? Why horses?
I wish I knew. But from a very, very young age, all I was doing was playing with horses, talking about horses, drawing horses, pretending I was a horse, you know, just like one of those little kids. I don't know. I was just always drawn to them just from as far back as I can remember. So I remember every time there was like a shooting star, or you could blow on a, you know, a little weed to make a wish, I would wish for a horse when I was a little kid. Every Christmas, I was asking for a horse from Santa. So it was just always a thing for me. So
I think we would have gotten along well when we were little kids, because I, even though I had horses around all the time, I did not have my own horse. So I did the same thing a lot. The stars, the, you know, asking Santa, all that stuff.
Okay, good. So I'm not the only one. I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm like, God, I'm just a crazy child. You know, my poor parents are like, is this ever going to go away? Nope. You know, just hang in there. All the girls out there, don't give up. You don't have one yet. Just keep harassing them.
Keep harassing your parents. That's good advice, Chelsea. I'm sure that all the parents out there will appreciate that.
You're welcome, parents. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing today with your horses. And if we can, I'd just like to go back to sort of when you made that decision that you were going to barrel race and how that kind of helped you through the difficult time after losing Tyler.
So when I moved to Nevada in 2012, you know, I thought I was doing pretty good, which I was. It had been 2 years since Tyler had passed. And, you know, like I said, I was dating and I moved here to kind of see how I would deal with things, really. And I've always wanted to get back into horses. And I just happened to have a few friends here that I met through Ryan, and they had a barrel racer working for them at their restaurant. So it's just one of those things. It's kind of funny when you look back, everything just starts to kind of align and snowball. And it's not always quite our doing. I think it's sometimes meant to be. So I met Shelley at the restaurant, and I ended up talking to her about barrel racing. And like I said, I only, you know, when I was younger, I did it a little bit, but I was, you know, I never had been to a jackpot in my life. And I talked to her and I was like, you know, I want to get a horse. I heard you have a horse for sale. And at the time I had no idea what a good barrel horse would cost or anything like that. So, and Shelley kind of took me under her wing and sold me Gigi, which really started everything. And Shelley had no idea I was going to get this far into barrel racing either. So, you know, she kind of was like, well, do you want just a barrel horse or do you want a horse that can do some other things? And I was like, well, I'd like to do some other things, you know? And so I got Gigi, and it just happened to be that I met Shelley. Otherwise, you know, I looked around in the area trying to see if there was anyone else that was barrel racing and tried to look up associations. But even that, I can't explain to people like how I had no idea what I was doing at all. Like, I don't think I could clarify that enough just to give some hope to someone out there that is like, I have no idea where to get started. I really had no idea. So I started researching. I did talk to some other people out here. I went out and met with them and saw them working their horses. But Shelley kind of took me under her wing and took me to my first barrel race with Gigi. I went over to Austin and would ride Gigi first for a while. And then I found a place to board her. And when I went to board her here, I met some really good vaquero style cow horse trainers. And that was super helpful too. So people just kind of started coming into my life, and I kept meeting new people and talking to them. And that's kind of how it took off. And luckily, you know, there's tons of horse people here, so that helped. But some significant individuals are the ones that probably really helped me get going. So, and the one was Shelley. She got me started. And then Katrina Sanders, she helped me when Gigi started having some issues after I first bought her. She had some stifle problems. So we kind of just laid off barrel racing, and she just taught me good basics of riding again. So,
well, that's always important for to go back to. I mean, it's important for people to learn that initially, but then be able to revisit it every so often as well. Well, pretty all the time, really.
Yes. Yes.
So tell us a little bit about Gigi and you know, what you're doing with her now and kind of what kind of a horse she is and how you guys work together.
Well, Gigi is a quarter horse, barrel horse, just a bunch of dash for cash and Bugs Alive 75. She is 9 years old this year, and she was started by a cow horse trainer. And when I got her, you know, I don't know why I was under the impression that she had a lot more experience than what she did. So we kind of probably maybe were not the best match at first. But the best thing for both of us was to work with Katrina and just lay off barrels. And she's taught me a lot, and hopefully I've taught her some. But I don't know, maybe not. But more than just the training, you know, I hadn't even realized how much more healing really I could do in my personal life apart from barrel racing. So just having her and spending time with her, I think, you know, made a huge difference for me. You know, I built a lot of confidence riding with her. I mean, having to go race in front of a ton of people and just basically start from this place where I was rebuilding my life. I didn't really know who I was anymore and really where I was going. So Gigi was kind of the catalyst with that. And I think what happened after I lost Tyler was when I came to Nevada, I kind of found the foundation of who I was and who I had always been. And that was, you know, based on horses. And Gigi kind of brought me back to that. And then, you know, I was able to grow from there and kind of solidify myself again and find myself in, and just not be afraid to start over and go out and do things that, you know, were seemed totally just crazy to do. And she gave me a lot of confidence. I guess that was really it. I learned to overcome fear, you know, even though I'd already kind of dealt with that, but not in a life way. I mean, I learned to overcome my husband's passing, but maybe really what she did was help me really start to live again and not just exist. So and take that step forward from just being okay and being comfortable to being okay with challenging myself and really figuring out, you know, what my purpose was and why I was still here. So,
well, that's really powerful. I love that you said live rather than just exist, because it seems like, you know, that can be a really hard thing for some people who are dealing with the type of loss that you did. And I'm just curious what you think is the difference between someone who struggles, you know, to live again and someone who can sort of pick up the pieces and find a new direction and thrive again rather than just exist, as you said.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's, again, existing is a very comfortable place to be, especially when you've come through something really difficult, something really traumatic. Once you can finally find your feet a little bit and feel stabilized, it feels good to just stay there. So what I would say the difference between just existing and living would be challenging yourself and going and really spending some time figuring out, like, what do you really want? What is really your passion beyond just every day? And then take a really scary step that scares the heck out of you and you can't even imagine how it's going to work out, but just take like a step in faith and go for it. And for me, that was buying my horse trailer. I didn't have a horse yet. I hadn't bought Gigi. And so I always tell this story to try to convey that to people is I wanted to ride again. I wanted to barrel race. It was this crazy dream from my childhood. And, you know, everyone was like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? Like, this is so, you know, I'd lived in Virginia for several years and, you know, you haven't had a horse in 10 years. Let alone barrel race. And, you know, I guess you could say I felt led. I bought that horse trailer and put out my intention of what I wanted to do. It was scary. It seemed, I had no idea how I was going to do it, but you take that first step, no matter how small it is, towards that passion or that goal that you have in your mind. And it's funny how everything will come together for you if you start doing that and start talking to people about it. You got to open up and tell people about your dream or your goal. You have to vocalize it and you'll just be amazed. I always say this too. You'll be amazed at how many people want to help you make those things happen. And then also take that gift or passion and then figure out how you're going to help other people with it. And those three things will bring you to where you need to be.
That's so true. Very, very good advice. So I wonder, when you were married to Tyler, when Tyler was still here, mm-hmm. was barrel racing ever part of your future plans with him? Or was that something that you sort of just developed, you know, on your own after you lost him?
Again, that was like a childhood dream. I never thought about barrel racing. I did not follow the NFR, but I still always wanted to have a horse. And we had planned that when he retired, we would move out west and get a log cabin and, you know, and have horses again. Even then, barrel racing was such a far off dream idea that, like, it just did. I didn't even dream it was possible. That's how far off it was. So to be here today is, you know, it's crazy to look back at how things have developed.
What are the goals that you have with your barrel racing now? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, right now there's a few things. So one, I mean, I would love to get my pro card. That may take me a little while, but I'm working on it. But beyond that, I just want to take what I'm doing and what I've learned and share it with others, especially other military widows or, but anyone really that is facing, you know, life-changing challenges, and try to show them that, you know, how to live again, or just inspire them and be like, yeah, you can do it, you know? And that's why I try to share my journey with people, and is to try to show them that, you know, no matter what you're going through, you can overcome it, and you can also live more than you ever have or ever even thought possible. And you always hear people talking about, oh, you know, you can do anything. And that kind of statement always was like, oh, yeah, that sounds great, you know, especially as a child. Like, yeah, sure, I'll be an astronaut. But if you really fully commit yourself and, again, tell people your dream, if you take the small steps towards it, and then you figure out how you're going to help others with it, you really can do anything. It just takes commitment on your part too. But so yeah, that my goal is to help others with my barrel racing. And the way I've been doing that is I've been trying to highlight some nonprofits that have helped me since Tyler passed, military nonprofits, and by raising money and also just raising awareness with them. So I have some patches, like you see the NFR girls with their sponsor patches. What I did, decided I thought I would do, I was like, that's cool, but I don't, you know, obviously I have no sponsors, but but I contacted some of the nonprofits. I was like, let me get some patches from you guys, and, you know, let me race with your patches, and then hopefully that can start a conversation with people, and I can share your mission with people, and I can, you know, bring the military world to the rodeo world. You know, they're two awesome communities that should be more connected. And I think it is building right now. There's some other, I know there's some barrel racers down in Texas that are military also that are bringing that connection. So
awesome. What organizations are you working with? And can you tell us a little bit about the sort of highlight some of them for us?
Okay. So one of the organizations that I really like is the American Widow Project. And Taryn is the founder, and she, without knowing me, also changed my life, because when I found her organization, she lost her husband also, military widow, and she started this organization after he died, because it was kind of her journey, similar to mine, to, you know, figuring out her purpose and how is she going to pay it forward to other people. And she paid it forward to other military widows by bringing a community together, because before her organization, it was, I mean, obviously as the wars have gone on, we've had more people and everyone's kind of started to regroup, but she really got it started, and she brought the widows together to meet each other and build a community. So that was amazing. And hear other people's stories. And beyond that, she taught me, from her life and what she did with that organization, that it's okay to live again after loss. It's okay to honor your husband, but it's okay to learn from that and live more ever than you have before and not feel guilty about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really what her message to me was. Because of course, at first, you know, you don't even feel okay about laughing. You feel guilty for that. So she really taught me, I guess, to live again. She would probably be an instrumental role model in my life. I have never actually met her, but I've met some of the other girls at the project, and they send out a documentary that she made shortly after she was widowed. She went around the country meeting other widows and sharing their story, and, you know, just being able to see that helps you feel not alone. And then you see other people that are past your time frame that are living, and hey, things are going to be okay. And that's a huge, huge thing to see, especially when you're early on after loss. So that's why I love that organization. And then there is Navy SEAL Foundation. They're great. They were based in Virginia, and they just do amazing things for the community, for the SEAL community, and including the surviving spouses. So that's another organization, and they do a ton of things personally for the surviving spouses and families. Like, they do scholarships and grants and give the surviving children computers for school, and it goes on and on. They do a lot of things. And then there is another group, Special Ops Survivors, and they're kind of similar to the American Widow Project in that they bring the special ops community surviving spouses together and try to help them with, like, twice a year now they do some get-togethers. They actually are doing one right now down in Florida. And so they bring the survivors together, and you learn from each other. You have, you know, different people come in and do counseling or inspirational talks and whatever, just to help you keep moving forward. So they're really awesome too. So those are probably the top three. I also have the Navy SEALs Fund. They kind of take care of Navy SEALs and their families post service. They also do some other specialized help and funding. Like, there were some guys that had some legal troubles. They were being charged, some SEALs, for, you know, misconduct or whatnot that was unfounded. So they help those guys a lot. And so they have their own little niche, I guess. And there's some really great people. So those guys and the Honor and Remember, and they have the Honor and Remember flag, which basically George Lutz started that organization, and his son was killed in Iraq, I believe. And he started this idea that there should be a flag for the fallen, because we have a flag for POWs, obviously, and the missing, and he wanted there to be a flag for the fallen. So he designed this flag, and he wanted it to be flown in all 50 states. So he's still working on that and getting all 50 states to adopt that at certain government buildings and whatnot. And he presents family members with a personalized flag. So in Virginia, I would, at Regent University, they presented me with a flag for Tyler. So he's doing some really great things too. So just really supporting Gold Star families is what he does. So
wow, sounds like some great groups. And yeah. I'll definitely link to their websites in the show notes, so anybody that comes on the site can find those too. Cool.
Yeah, I could go on and on. So I'm gonna try to bring it in.
Now, I meant to ask you this earlier. You went back to school after Tyler's passing. Yes. Is that right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And you got a degree in psychology?
Yes. Yes. Originally, I had gone to school for business. And there was a time right between the Navy, getting out of the Navy and moving to Virginia, that I was in Montana for a little while. So I went to MSUB there in Billings and got started in business. And then I moved back to Virginia, and the GI Bill and all that was changing. So I took some time off, and before Tyler passed, I was going to Regent University, which is a Christian university down in Virginia. And that also, they're great people there. They really supported me. And I was also kind of building, I guess, in my spiritual life before Tyler passed away. And I'm really grateful for that. That helped. I mean, if anything can help, but it's good to have, for me, it was good to have that foundation of faith and in Christ in my life. And that was, they're really a great school. But yeah, after he passed away though, I was on a break for the summer so we could spend time, and other people talked me into going back, even though I was couch bound and I wasn't exactly sure how I could pay attention through my classes, let alone, you know, get to my destination driving. But it was great because I had a lot of support. I had some excellent professors and met some lifelong friends, and it got me going. And that it was definitely one of those things that I didn't think I was going to be able to do and to finish after he passed away. But he also, that was always one of his things. He always really pushed for me to get my degree. He got his degree like right out of high school and was in the Marine Corps Reserves and all that. So he was just an overachiever. So for me to not have my, you know, he was like, you got to do this, you got to do that. So I knew that, you know, after a few months, everyone's like, you gotta go back. You got to keep going. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Yeah, you're right. Like he'd be chasing me around, be like, you got to get back to school. You got to finish your degree. So I went back, I finished, and I studied psychology, which was something that I was actually really interested in. So yeah, that was a great thing I'm really glad I did that. And it was one of those things that showed me that, okay, wait a minute, I can keep going. I can do this. You know, it's just one of those things that seems difficult, but if you really push yourself and you achieve it, you overcome it, then you're like, oh, what else can I do? So I'm really glad that I did that.
Do you think that if you hadn't gone back, that things would be different, that it would have taken you longer to sort of get back on your feet again?
Yes. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it again, it's very easy to stay comfortable or enclosed, and who knows how long I would have stayed in my house, you know, just going to 7-Eleven to get coffee and Oreos. I could have done that for months, I'm sure. So, so
the widow diet.
Oh yeah. It's not healthy. At least mine wasn't. but so yeah, it was instrumental in me getting out, you know, being in social life again. And it was not easy. I won't make it at all. I mean, I was crying in class, and you know, there are certain topics that come up, but I was at a great school, and you know, it's like, well, you know, people knew what happened. The school had been really supportive. And when they passed away, you know, they sent condolences and, you know, let everybody at the school know what had happened. So everyone was just really supportive. And I guess that was a great thing for me too, is be like, you know, it's okay. You know, you don't have to feel like an outcast or that you're making everyone uncomfortable. I mean, I got really comfortable with making other people uncomfortable anyways. So that's what I would recommend to other widows. Like, hey, you know, if you gotta cry and people are uncomfortable, it's okay. Like, you don't have to hide it. Just cry, get it out, move on. So, and that's pretty much what I learned to do. So, but yes, going back to school, I can't imagine what would have happened if I hadn't done that. That was one of the big steps to continuing on with life, even though I didn't necessarily want to do it at first. It was for the best, for sure.
Yeah, it's almost like you just, no matter how much you want to just like melt into a puddle on the floor and stay there, mm-hmm. the quicker you can kind of get back on your feet and get going again, it's the quicker you sort of get re-engaged with life. And I'm sure it's different for everyone, and some people need longer and all that. But I would guess that's hugely healing for anyone.
Yeah, and there's really like two different, I guess, approaches. I mean, there's many different approaches, but some people, you know, they don't allow themselves the time to melt into a puddle on the floor, because I think that's totally justifiable. But at some point in time, yeah, you can't let yourself stay there. You know, you can't stay in that place, because that's not life. And that's not what we're here for. And that's what I always had to tell myself too, is that, you know, I'm still alive and there's a reason for that. And also, just knowing Tyler, he was a just very blunt person. He would have told me, you know, get off my ass is what he would have said. So, and I knew that. So I couldn't totally, you know, stay there and feel like it was okay. I knew it wasn't okay, but you know, it's good to have that support and people to motivate you. As much as you don't want to do it, and you're not gonna want to do it at all, eventually, you're gonna be glad you did.
Right.
So you can't let yourself stay there in that kind of helpless place. So yeah, definitely I would encourage anyone, if they're stuck in that, to, you know, take some steps to find something that's gonna help you get out there. And again, like everything else, you'll just be surprised when you start to share your story with other people and engage with people how much support you'll get. So
yeah, I mean, not everyone can relate to being a military widow, but most people can relate to loss in some mm-hmm. way, and everybody wants to help other people. So
right.
I love how you said you got comfortable with making other people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some people just don't know how to respond. It's, you know, they want to be able to help you and they don't know how.
Right. Right. And some people get really upset about that. I guess people as in like widows or someone who is, you know, has lost someone close to them in their lives, they get upset about that. It never upset me. you know, when people didn't know what to say or if they said something that seemed like totally inappropriate, you know, like, you'll get married again. Don't worry. So you'll, you know, you'll live through this, you know, like 3 days after he passed away or whatever.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm like, yeah, okay, thanks, you know. And, you know, that's obviously not something you want to hear at the time. But, I mean, you just have to take it for what it is. And I just always tried to say, like, well, thank God they don't know what this feels like. Thank God they can't identify with what I'm going through, you know, because that is one of, I swear, one of the worst things that you could possibly go through. And, I mean, I know there's a lot of other terrible things, but it's one of the worst. And so I just feel like, well, you know, why would they know? And I'm glad they don't. Some people, amazingly, that have never been through it. I had had one friend in particular who, you know, thank God for her. For some reason, she just totally got it. I mean, she's really good friends with Tyler and her husband also. They're all from New Hampshire and had known each other actually before I met him. And somehow she got it. She totally got it. So there was some things that, you know, other people wouldn't understand, but, you know, I was really grateful for her because she could understand what was going on. So, but yeah, you just have to realize that, you know, people are just trying to do their best. They're just trying to help you. And if you can, don't lash out at them. Just be grateful. They're just trying to help you.
Right. They might not always know the best way to go about
it. Yeah. And even now it's, you know, it's been a while since Tyler had passed. And one of our friends, she's older, she just lost her husband. And, you know, even after time, it's like, you know what it's like. And some, I feel like sometimes that'll make me even more awkward when I go to comfort someone, because I know what, I mean, I don't know exactly what they're going through because everyone has a different experience, but yeah, I mean, there's not any perfect thing to say. I guess that's really the answer, is that there's nothing to say. And actually, my friend Katie, who I was just mentioning, the best thing she ever said to me is that, like, this just sucks. It sucks. There's no good thing. There's nothing that's going to fix this. There's nothing I can say that's going to make it better. It just sucks. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And, you know, if that's really probably the best thing you could say to someone that's in that situation. It just sucks.
Yeah.
So
don't try and cheer them up. That's not going to work. just be there for them and help them.
Yeah. And just roll with it. You know, they're happy, they're cool, they're laughing. Probably the next second they're going to be crying, and just roll with it. You know, that's the best thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome advice. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that can benefit from your story and hopefully help them through, you know, difficult time of their own. So if people want to find you online and learn more about you, where can they do that?
Well, they can go to my Facebook page. It is just Facebook/Chelsea Stimson. I also have a blog, and I should know the address to that, but I don't. I think it's the same thing. I think it's at WordPress.
I'll link to that.
It's on my Facebook page. But yeah, the best. I'm so good at promoting myself. But the Facebook page is really like the main place to go. And I have links to my blog, where I share some things that I went through after Tyler passed away, because I did keep a blog/journal. So I share that with people, and what's going on now, and just some of the lessons that I've learned and am still learning as I go on. So that's what the blog is for. But yeah, I share barrel racing on the Facebook page. I'm also on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram. So, and I think all those are linked on there. If they're not, I'll go on there and make sure they are today.
I'll put those in the show.
Or I'll leave it up to you. Yeah.
So everyone can find you online at all of your homes online. So I just have one final question for you, Chelsea. Sure. And I always ask this question at the end of every interview. What do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy or cowgirl to have?
I would say, well, there's too many. Maybe patience. Patience would be the best quality. Patience with yourself, patience with your animals, patience with life. I'd probably be what I would say is one of the best qualities.
Well, I would agree. I think that's a a good quality for anyone to have, and it's not something we're always good at, but it's even more vital when we're dealing with animals, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Chelsea, for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me ramble on.
No, it's great. It's great having you, and we'll wrap the show with that.
All right. Sounds good.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chelsea Stimson. She really is an amazing person and so inspiring. And I love what she said about how getting Gigi really helped her to start living again and not just existing. Sometimes it's really easy for all of us, even when we haven't gone through a tragedy like she did, to get stuck in that place where we're just getting by, but not really striving to reach our goals and our true potential. So if you have goals or dreams or things you want to accomplish with horses or whatever the case may be, I would love to hear from you. And if there's any way I can help you, I would love to do that. So reach out to me. You can email me on the website at earnyourspurs.com. You can hook up with me on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. And I would absolutely love to hear from you. In closing, I just want to say happy Veterans Day to all of you veterans. Thank you for your service. And to all of you listening, I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.